You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. Before we get started, I wanted to take a moment and let you know about Pipeline West. Yeah, that's right. You heard me. We are going to sunny Orange County, California, February 22 to 23. We're going to be having our main day event with speakers like Carrie Newhoff, Albert Tate, Eric Geiger, Tom Rainer, and many more. The next day, we'll be then having a full day of coaching to help you learn and implement Pipeline at your church. So be sure to register before October 31st for our super early bird rates and bring your family. Let's hang out at the beach, at the conference. It's going to be great.
You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm here with Daniel M.
Hello, hello.
And also a very special guest who we've been chit-chatting with for about 10 minutes.
which is behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes.
Officially. Right.
Doesn't always happen. But we're talking with Ben Stewart, who just moved to D.C. And as you guys know, I came to Nashville from D.C. and miss it. Quite often. And so I was just discussing venues and all kinds of fun things with Ben. But most importantly, and he has a new book that just dropped yesterday as of this recording, and that is Single, Dating, Engaged, Married, Navigating Life and Love in the Modern Age. So I already learned a couple of very interesting facts in looking at it. First off, that the average age of a female to get married now is 27, and yet the first child average age for a woman is 26.
That's right.
That's messed
really?
Up.
Where is that from?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a historic shift in our culture that's fairly recent one, you know. And it's fascinating to think about what that means going forward in the future as you watch young generations grow up, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, we're going to talk about leadership stuff. We want to talk about Texas A&M and your work in college ministry, your ongoing work with Passion. But that's dropping right now. And just I think the connection that, that you make between, isolation and addiction is also really interesting as well. I never really thought about that before, but I know I don't make good choices when I'm alone. And I would say most of our listeners probably don't make good choices when they're alone either.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, we're only as sick as our secrets, right? Is the famous AA tagline. And I think it's really true, you know, and, addiction thrives in that darkness.
Yeah.
And is often when you trace the root, addiction is an intimacy disorder, is what Patrick Carnes would say. It's the needs that I am at some level failing to have met in a healthy communal way. I'm now going to something, a substance or a distraction to numb the pain or to bring some semblance of joy. And so when you see that, you can have empathy in a new way for someone who's struggling with addiction, of going, this is an intimacy disorder. You know, what we need is discipline, yes, but we also need love to heal the wounds.
Yeah. I love that. And before we get into our questions, can you just give our listeners just a quick synopsis of your book? Because I'm just looking at the table of contents here and I personally want to know more. so give us kind of the 50,000 foot level, you know, just a quick overview. Why'd you write it? What's the purpose of it? And we'll get into the questions.
Yeah. Well, you know, I spent the last 12 years living and working among college students on the campus of Texas A&M as the director of Breakaway Ministries. And over the decade, you know, when I got there, the iPhone hadn't come out yet, you know, so watching technology change, I had a front row seat to watching a lot of shifts happen, particularly as it landed in the lives of young people. But one of the major shifts I saw was an increasing complexity and anxiety in the world of relationships. And as someone who loves them, I'm like, this is not good. Like, this is meant to be fun and life-giving, not just stressful and sad. And So this book was birthed in me in one sense out of a pastoral love for young people. They didn't create this new environment, but they are growing up and being shaped in it. And what I found is many of them just felt lost. And I'm like, I wanted to create a guidebook to help them. You know, when I was single, I felt like in my time with God, out of college, struggling with what is singleness for, looking in the Word of God, I'm like, you know, there's real clear stars to navigate by. This is what singleness is for. And as I charted towards that, there was a lot more peace and a lot more joy in my life. And so this book is meant to be a guidebook through each stage. What are these stages for? And so then how do we maximize the benefits of each stage and minimize the pain in each stage? So it's not necessarily a book on how to get married. It's a book on how to navigate those four stages well. And so that's where it came from, a conviction about clarity of purpose and a just a real care for a lot of young people I met who just felt lost.
Yeah, I love that.
Good deal.
That's good.
All right. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and launch into our first question. And so in doing so, you just mentioned you've been doing this type of ministry for 12 years and now you're making a massive transition, you're moving from Texas to DC, which is kind of crazy.
And from parachurch ministry to church ministry.
Yeah. So talk to us. I'm always curious, but who are you learning from right now?
Yeah, that's an easy one. I would say Louis Giglio. It's a long story. I won't take you all the way through. I was not looking for the door to exit Breakaway Ministries on the campus of A&M. It's an incredible ministry. I loved what I was doing. But long story short, as I felt this, you know, God transitioning me to be a pastor, I was struggling with what that would look like. And I am in many ways a product of Passion Conferences. And then by the grace of God, I'd gotten to know Louis as Passion City Church launched and was growing. And we had a conversation a few years ago where he said, I would like to see Passion City churches in strategic cities around the world. And I thought, man, that's great. More power to you. But as we continued to visit, he said, I want you to lead the charge on that. And the opportunity to sit and be mentored by and led by Louis has been incredible. So this last year, I moved to Atlanta and we've grabbed coffee roughly once a week. And it's been a master's class in leadership to sit and listen to him and see how he's led an incredible movement for the last couple decades.
And, you know, go back to those times when you're having coffee with them, when you're meeting with them. What are some of those lessons that you really took away as you're now in DC?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing I learned from Louis, it's not like a sentence he said. It was more watching the art of how we navigated decisions. And I think the things I caught from him were, number one, just an incredible confidence that God is building his church and God is leading his people. And he just doesn't do a lot of hand-wringing about, oh man, I hope God shows up. You know, it's like God is building his church and God's on the move. And so there's a humility in our dependence upon God, but an incredible confidence that would come out in all manner of conversations. So even as we were saying, what city should we move to? He said, well, Ben, do the research, visit the places, and God's going to lead you. He just felt incredible confidence about that. God's going to lead us to the right city and God's going to provide the money. And I just love that as those things came to pass, I'm like, I love that you walked into all those decisions guided by faith and not fear. And I want to live like that. I don't want to be panicking all the way until God shows up. I want to live in faith in the unknown.
Man.
The other thing I would say was just patience. I watched him have a lot of patience to let things develop in their own time. And I think that's a growth edge for me is patience. So
love that, man. I wish some of those conversations were recorded.
That'd be great.
I kind of do too, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Well, we did interview him on the podcast.
Yeah, we did.
That was one of, that's still one of the episodes that if you look at our downloads, that's one that people go back and listen to quite a bit. I mean, I do think that it's important to always remember that, you know, leadership is both an art and a science. And so there are always going to be those things that are caught more than taught and that you can't learn in one sitting. You know, but over the course of time.
Yeah, it's not a formula, right? Making decisions, discerning, even just transition with your family, with, you know, just even all the tensions that you bring up in your book as well. It's really that aspect of, okay, now that you know, how do you then kind of synthesize information and move forward?
Yeah. Well, and I would say one of the things I saw with Louis too is, you know, as bright as he is and talented as he is, he was constantly learning, is constantly learning, and surrounded by a ring of counselors and smart people. And you go, man, even somebody who's this naturally gifted or this intelligent still sees the value of community. And I would encourage every leader to always be doing that, looking around and saying, who are the people that are better than me in key areas? And let me develop, whether it's formally as a board or informally, meeting people, a ring of counselors that I can lean on. And I've tried to always do that. It was fun to see Louis do the same. And you're right, even in the book, I'll bring that up relationally. You want some people around you that love you and aren't afraid to be honest with you can help you see clearly the edges of your life you can't see.
Love that. Love that. So with you moving from Texas, from college ministry to DC, the other side of the country, into church ministry, and as you're preparing to launch, even before we started talking, you said you're looking for a location and really bringing up your team that way. What is the main point of your emphasis right now for yourself, for your leadership team?
That's a great question. We just met for the first time this weekend, and I told them the word that we're coming around right now is adaptability. The ability to adapt. There's a book I read a few years ago on survivors, who survives, and the chapters are all about, you know, in a plane crash out in the jungle, you know, every horrible situation you can imagine, who survives? And the common denominator in all these extreme situations is the person who survives is the person who can most quickly adapt to the new reality. And they said, even in situations like stranded on a snow-capped mountain, there were cases where a middle-aged mom would survive where strapping young men didn't. And it was because she was just able to adapt. Okay, this is the new normal. The plane is gone. Now let's start making decisions based on this new information. And whoever can adapt to the new situation the fastest survives. I just saw this. I went down to Houston a few days ago just to check on friends, to see the damage, and went to a friend's house that had just been ravaged by Hurricane Harvey. And when we were out there, all of his worldly goods are piled in the front lawn. The sheetrock of his house had to be gutted from shoulder height down. And you're looking at that and going, man, this is real devastation. But he smiled when I saw him. He's like, hey, I texted you the other day. And I'm like, why are you happy right now, Roger? Like, your whole world's like thrashed. And it was, you know, 2 days later, and he had already mapped out a place to stay, they're on air mattresses, but his kid's back in school and he's rolling. And as I was talking to him, you know, he owns a car dealership. His entire lot was flooded, lost every car. Wow. But our mutual friend who was with us said, hey, Ben, did you know what Roger was doing while the flood was happening? Literally while the water was filling the first floor of his house. I said, no. He said, Roger was upstairs on the phone ordering cars because he knew, well, my whole inventory is probably going to get ruined and a lot of people are going to need cars. So let me go ahead and get the trucks bringing new cars down to Houston. And I was looking at Roger and I'm like, that's why he's smiling, because this guy the water's not done filling his house. And he's like, okay, here's the new normal. My whole business is flooded. My whole house is flooded. This is the reality. Let's adapt. And Harvey, as significant as it is not going to destroy him.
Yeah.
He's going to move through it. And, you know, I could start preaching now, but you know, that's what Apostle Paul did. If I can't preach in a synagogue, I'll preach by the river. I'll preach by the Hall of Tyrannus. And so I just told our team, the plan will have to adapt, locations will adapt, but adaptability is going to be the name of the game for us.
Good deal.
That's so good.
That's good. So what are we implanting campuses in and around the DC area? I can already tell you adaptability is going to be important because right. There will be zoning issues. There will be all kinds of things that you never dreamed of. We always said flexibility is the best ability, but I like adaptability is a better word. Okay, so what are two or three things you absolutely must do daily, and what benefit do they have for your life and leadership other than reading the Bible? What are two things you must do daily?
Other than the Bible, yeah. I would say the first thing is I cast my anxieties on the Lord. I have to start there. And the way I do that for me is I have a journal and I write out at the very top, I write the sentence, how do you feel every day? Because I realize as a doer and maybe as a man, I would typically just start writing what I need to do and then start trying to make a plan of how to execute what I need to do. But I wasn't paying attention to what was happening in my heart. And often what would happen is I would attack the to-do list out of a place of anxiety and fear, which fear is a motivator, but not always in the most healthy directions. And so I just sit down every day and I write at the top of my journal, how do you feel? And I just let myself vent it. And it's positive sometimes, you know, like I'll write out hopeful, but often it's like anxious, scared, a little discouraged, a little ashamed. And then I just start diagnosing my soul. Why is that? Well, I'm worried about this. I'm anxious about this. I'm unsure about this. I'm concerned this person may not like me. And I just let myself evaluate my own emotional state. And then, you know, it's Philippians 4. I take all those anxieties and I cast them on the Lord. And then Paul says, whatever is beautiful, lovely, then think on those things. And I find Bible reading, prayer is much more nourishing to my soul when I have an honest soul diagnostic the first part of the day. And if I don't do that, I usually roll into the day operating out of a reactive, anxious place rather than a faith-filled, purposeful place.
I love that because it's a combination of, you know, both practical and spiritual. I mean, you know, it's not just, hey, this is the way I start my day. It's, you know, with spiritual, which is what we would expect, but it's, hey, here's a really practical way to do that. And like you said, it didn't have to be, you know, you're not, when people think journaling, they picture you in a coffee shop, you know, half shaven and flannel. Not okay, this is how I'm going to start my day. I'm going to get some stuff done, but I want to make sure that I'm setting, you know, that I'm focused on a direction, not a destination. You like that, Daniel?
I do like that. Where does that come from?
That comes from a book that you dropped earlier this week, actually.
Nice. I hear you. I hear the same thing from people. It's like, I'm not sitting there going, dear diary, Daniel said the craziest thing. You know, like it's more about, you know, if you want to put it in military terms, you know, they say slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And I just spent too many years trying to go fast and you end up being inefficient.
Yeah.
And you go, if I can slow down and prioritize what's happening in me, I can see situations clearer. I can make decisions more clear-headed. And ultimately, I'm just more efficient.
Yeah, what I love about that, Ben, is just how you shared that. Because, man, I I remember probably 10 years ago or so, I had journaled. It was just one of those things that I learned as a discipline. I didn't like doing it, but I just did it because people said I should do it. And I hadn't for really the last 10 years. And over this last year, we had a New Churches webinar with Matt Chandler, and he brought it up. And we did podcasts with some other leaders that I respected, and they would bring it up. And just I just kept on hearing it over and over again. I was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to try it. And for the last, I think it's May, I've been imperfectly doing it. Right? Sometimes, never seven times. I mean, sometimes five times a week, sometimes three or two times a week. But every time I do it, I mean, it's in conjunction with my scripture reading. It's in conjunction with my prayer. And oftentimes I just end up writing down what I would verbally pray. But you're so right, Ben, in that it helps me slow down. And because after one, because honestly, when I'm done and I write amen, it's closed and I just go full fledged forward. So I just so appreciate you sharing that because it's been helpful for me personally.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the great tragedies of the last 10 years is, you know, there's a lot of good that's come from technology, but the cost has been reflection. You know, if you think about when you were sitting at a stoplight 10 years ago, what were you doing? You were alone with your thoughts. You know, when you laid in bed at night, what were you doing? You were alone with your thoughts. You weren't necessarily getting more input. You were meditating, you know, not in the lotus position, but you were reflecting on your day. And it's that reflection that leads to insight and innovation, leads to those things.
Yeah.
And I think the big tragedy I see in young people today is that loss of insight, because there's a loss of reflection. And honestly, that really, I mean, not to try to swing it back to the book, that's where the book came from, is going, everyone wants a sense of purpose in their life, like why? And I wanted to give them purpose in the stages they're in, but it's that level of clear-headed thinking that can get lost in a fractured world. And the way I thought I could love people is providing that clarity that insight provides.
Yeah.
That's getting lost because we don't pause to think very often.
Yeah, that's so good. No, Ben, you once again moved from Texas to DC. You're married. You have three children. What does leadership in your home look like? You know, not normally, right? Normally, but also in the transition.
Yeah. Well, they're all under five, so it looks a bit like chaos.
Good job, man.
Yeah, we stacked them up quick, you know.
We did the same.
Yeah. Scared to death of being bored, so we dodged that. But I would say, you know, for Donna and I, and this is, again, I'll get a little Bible teachery on you for a second, but that's just how I'm built. Genesis 1 has meant the world to me, just thinking about, because I struggled for a while. You know, I didn't have a dad in the home growing up, and I thought, what does a man in the house do? You know, and Genesis helped me, just looking at, you know, Genesis 1, the first 3 days God built structure, and the second 3 days he filled the structure. You know, that was the problem of Genesis 1. The world was formless and void. It had no form, no structure, and it had no fullness, no life. And so God spends 3 days building the theological structures, and then 3 days filling them with life. And then he tells the man to do the same thing. He says, cultivate. He's like, I built structure conducive to life. Now man, cultivate. And you go, what's cultivating? It's creating structures that are conducive for life. Build an environment that's conducive for growth. And for me, that was revolutionary. I'm going, that's all I need to do as a man. I need to take my time and my money and my energy and say, how do I structure the material I have so that my wife and my children flourish under God? And once I start thinking that way, it can be a bit of plug and play of going, what do the kids need? Well, they need, you know, this kind of room down to this kind of bed, or we need to get them in this kind of school, down to we need this kind of time together for a family. So I'm going to prioritize this kind of time. So for us, we have breakfast together every day because the evenings can get unpredictable. But I'm like, we're going to have at least five meals a day, probably seven a week together. And that was a part of that, trying to map out our lives by priority. And same with my wife. I've realized as a man, I need to be a student of my wife, what helps her flourish under God. And this just came up the other day. She bought an entertainment center for the living room. And I know my wife loves to build things, loves it. Like, I bought her wood once for her birthday, and it was like the best gift ever. And so part of loving my wife.
So she'll build it?
Yes. She's built picnic tables from scratch, man. I mean,
that's cool.
At Home wow. Depot, they knew my wife by name, you know, wow. in College Station.
But Chip and Joanna Gaines, I mean, they have their new line with Target. Who needs to build anything anymore?
She loves that stuff, man. So, but that's part of what I tell guys.
You need to build stuff, though.
Part of my wife's to let her build stuff, and I just get out of the way. So I'm going to go read a book.
I like my kids' birthdays because then I get to build like crazy stuff, and I have an excuse. Like, you know, a life-size Angry Birds.
She wouldn't let me
with
touch
surgical
it,
tube that will launch a volleyball 100 yards.
That's awesome.
Good for you, man. That's fantastic. Yeah, I'm just not built that way. It's a bummer.
It's a good excuse.
I'm not too handy. But yeah, it looks crazy right now, but I think the best thing we do is breakfast together and then we go on adventures, you know, especially in a city like this. I'm just trying to always plan an adventure to go on with the kids. You know, I've noticed that makes them come alive.
And that's cool. And it is so neat because we had Jimmy Scroggins on the 5LQ podcast and with his like a million kids, they eat dinner every day. It's like 9 p.m. What's his name? Jim Shaddix. He had breakfast with all every his day. Kids, regardless of all the schedule. So it's so neat to see what leadership looks like at home. So I appreciate that, Ben, that even in the midst of moving and the book and planting a church and all that, that you're really making that a priority. I know your kids are going to remember that for years to come.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
Our last question, you've probably had a chance to really rehearse like literally 1,000 times over the last decade, which is what would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
Yeah, right. My whole like last talk at Breakaway, I think, was titled "What Would I Tell My 20-Year-Old Self?" But well,
we don't have that much time left. But
yeah, exactly. You know, honestly, in terms of leadership, what I would tell the 20-year-old me is, you need to cool out. Just relax, man. I think there was so much anxiety in me about, am I going to succeed? Am I going to make it? Is God going to come through for me? Am I going to fail? Am I going to miss what I was supposed to do? Am I going to never reach my potential? And I would get so spun up with anxiety over the uncertainty of the future. Because, you know, when you're 20, there's much, much more ahead of you than behind you. And I look back now and I go, God is a good shepherd. He's a good father. Everything he says about himself and his word is true. I just, as I look back at the chapters of my life that have closed, I wish I would have rolled through those with a real confidence in him, not freaking out that he wasn't going to show up. So I think if I would see the 20-year-old me, I don't know if he would have believed me, but I'd say, man, you got to cool out, bro. It's going to be okay. Like, it's just trust God and do good. And it's going to be all right.
Man, that is so good. We've certainly enjoyed having you on the podcast, Ben. And just, man, we look forward to having you on again. And we'll be praying for your ministry there in D.C. Listeners, if you would please step over to iTunes and leave us a rating and review. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Be sure to join us in California this February for Pipeline West. If you register you and your team soon, then you can take advantage of the super early bird pricing. Once again, that's myleadershippipeline.com. We'll see you there.